Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, February 6th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Some ZANU-PF activists led by Harare councillor have blocked the official groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of an Asian-funded $40 million state-of-the-art mall.
Give us some time, enough time, to make sure that we prepare. I'm sorry for the delay, man.
The European Union is expected to review its position on targeted measures against President Robert Mugabe, his wife Grace, and the Zimbabwe defense industries within the next 2 weeks.
Well, you have to look to the initial decision of 2002, and the situation will be assessed on that basis. But again, I'm not here anticipating any of the council decisions.
And Zambia's newly elected President Edgar Lungu was in Harare today for bilateral talks with President Robert Mugabe, 2 weeks after he won a closely contested presidential poll. Some ZANU-PF activists led by Harare Ward 4 Councillor Martin Matinyanya today blocked the official groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of an Asian-funded $40 million state-of-the-art mall, saying they were not informed about the project. Matinyanya and his ruling party colleagues also said they did not want white investors in their suburb. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
For more than 30 minutes, Councillor Matinyanya and some ZANU-PF supporters mocked and harassed senior council officials led by town clerk Tendai Mahachi, who had gathered for the official groundbreaking ceremony for the proposed Mpezanamo Upmarket 2 in Harare Simbare high-density suburb. They threatened to beat up Movement for Democratic Change councillors, including Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni. Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo was expected to officiate but did not turn up. Matinyanya threatened to assault the MDC councillors in the minister's presence. Matinyanya and his group forced Mahachi to call off the event.
I think we try to do it next week on Friday so as to make sure that he can participate in this one. So that is what is there, but you give us some time, enough time, to make sure that we prepare. I'm sorry for the delay, man.
Thereafter, Matinyanya and the toy-toying ZANU-PF activists chased away people who had gathered for the event, who included officials from some three Asian countries. They could not be drawn to comment about what they were doing, as they threatened to beat up anyone who was not a ZANU-PF supporter. Asked to comment, Mayor Manyenyeni said, "What happened today is regrettable and unnecessary.
It's most unfortunate. We are an inclusive city. We encourage everybody to be here."
At the same time, Councillor Herbert Gomba, who chairs the council's business committee, said it was said that some people were politicizing a project meant to create thousands of jobs.
"It's unfortunate. The intention of this council is just to create employment to help in the development and the growth of the economy. And it's unfortunate that some people are getting in between."
Asked whether Matinyanya would face disciplinary action, Deputy Mayor Thomas Muzwa said it was up to his ZANU-PF party to deal with him.
"We don't have to fight him here in the council or to discipline him as the office of the mayor or as the office of any council, but to tell him that what we are doing is wrong. We will tell your party will deal with you."
The project, which is a joint venture between Harare City Council and Consortio International, is expected to provide the local community with 5,000 flea market stores, 67 small shops, supermarkets, secure parking area, an eating area, a commercial center with banks, office space, and sports facilities. Some economists who spoke to Studio 7 said such behavior was against the government's agenda of creating employment and empowering citizens. Former Minister of Finance Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya said this should never be allowed to happen again in Zimbabwe as it discourages foreign investors. In 2012, ZANU-PF activists blocked a $5 million construction project in the same suburb, which was proposed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The project was moved to Tsvaresekwa high-density suburb. During the same year, they also blocked a $1.3 million fuel project proposed by local businessman Alex Mashamanda and another $30 million scheme to upgrade Mbare Musika bus terminals. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. In a related development, there have been clashes between workers of Blue Ribbon Foods and indigenous business people over the control of the company following indications that a foreign buyer is interested in purchasing the struggling entity. Tanzanian business group Bakhresa has expressed interest in the company, but the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe is resisting this move, claiming the company cannot be sold to foreigners since it is already being controlled by indigenous investors. It is also not happy about the $16 billion being offered by Bakhresa. Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks with United Food and Allied Workers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Adonia Mutero about workers' concerns and the pending deal.
In fact, we are not against the issue of indigenization, but we are totally behind the issue of Bakhresa Blue Ribbon deal because it will give some more income to the employees who have suffered for long, over 2 years without a salary. So basically, we are totally against the so-called petition by members of Zimbabwe, which is nothing but sheer greed, and also against the perspective of our Zimbabwe for the creation of jobs. How can you create jobs when someone is trying to broker a lucrative deal which can easily create such jobs?
There are some who are saying that a staple food should not be prepared by outsiders like this Bakhresa company from Tanzania. The opportunity should be given to Zimbabweans.
You can only do so with the capacity. How can you not outsource or extend the capacity when people are dying?
Do you think the government is going to go ahead and give Bakhresa the opportunity to run Blue Ribbon Industries following the intervention of the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe?
I think the determined factor here, it should be the interest of the workers or the people of Zimbabwe, not of those few individuals, greedy individuals.
That was the United Food and Allied Workers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Adonia Mutero in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
The European Union is expected to review its position on targeted measures against President Robert Mugabe, his wife Grace, and the Zimbabwe defense industries within the next 2 weeks. But diplomatic sources speaking on condition of anonymity say the 28-member bloc is divided on the way forward. The appointment last week of Mr. Robert Mugabe as the African Union chairperson for a year has complicated matters for the EU. A member of the European Parliament from Britain, Catherine Breda, is quoted in the Times newspaper as saying the appointment of Mr. Mugabe to lead the AU was not a constructive step for African-European Union relations. The EU imposed the targeted measures against President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle in 2002, accusing them of gross human rights violations and election rigging. But in its defense, Harare says sanctions were imposed when it redistributed land to the majority blacks at the expense of the minority whites. However, the bloc removed targeted measures on the remaining 8 of Mr. Mugabe's lieutenants, who included service chiefs and a former Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Didmas Mutasa, in February last year. Last year, the EU said that the restoration of democracy and respect for human rights were prerequisites for the removal of the targeted measures. After the removal of the targeted measures, the EU will this month resume direct cooperation with the Zimbabwean government. EU Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philippe Vandeme, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that deliberations on the matter have started, though they're still premature to comment.
In fact, the spokesperson of the commission was asked whether the chairmanship of the AU of President Mugabe would change anything. And in fact, she wanted to refer to the standard international diplomatic practice, which says that whenever a person who is under a travel ban has to participate in an international event for the well-being of the world, he can obtain a waiver. So what she wanted to say is basically, okay, as a chair of the African Union, he may have to represent Africa more often in international fora, and he will, as in the past, be able to ask for ad hoc waivers, like he did last year when he went to the Vienna summit on the landlocked countries, or when he goes to the Vatican or something like that. So he can obtain ad hoc waivers, like as in the past.
Lastly, in coming up with the decision, what issues will be the EU looking at here?
Well, you have to look to the initial decision of 2002, and the situation will be assessed on that basis. But again, I'm not here anticipating any of the council decisions. No, it's the sovereign right of the council decision to justify its decision. So let's wait another 10 days and you will have the information you want. So exactly 2 weeks.
That was Philip Van Deme. But ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kaya Moyo tells Blessing Zulu that Harare expects an unconditional lifting of sanctions because they are illegal.
We're expecting total removal of all illegal sanctions.
But how about their concerns that some things have not been done, like the aligning of the constitution?
That is their business. I'm saying our position is very clear. All illegal, the illegal sanctions must be removed unconditionally. That is our position, both as a party and as government.
But is Harare at least happy that engagement with the EU has started, with the EU promising that it will be dealing directly with the government, not non-governmental organizations?
We are not a government of promises. We are a ruling party and government in power. So we don't depend on promises from anybody.
And how would you say, Ambassador Moyo, these sanctions have hurt Zimbabwe's economy?
Of course, they've devastated the economy, you know that. A lot of industries have closed, you know that. A lot of people have been retrenched, you know that. And of course, you know, a lot of things have been affected because of the imposition of these sanctions.
But your critics would say maybe the industries are collapsing because of the government's inconsistent economic policies.
That is their business, those who don't even live here. We live here, we know what is happening. If there are speculators from somewhere, let them continue speculating. And so sanctions are not imaginary. They were imposed on the economy of this country and on our leadership. So it's not as if we are rumor mongering.
That was ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kaya Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Human rights lawyer Dewama Vinga, a senior researcher with the Human Rights Watch, says Harare's democracy scorecard is disappointing and the EU must insist on reforms.
I think the guiding framework ought to be the human rights scorecard of the country and the level to which there have been, or the lack of reforms, constitutional reforms, implementation of agreed reforms, that should inform that kind of decision on whether or not the restrictive measures are lifted or extended. I think there must be that clear linkage which must be made by the EU in arriving at a decision.
But, Mr. Mavinga, there are those who are saying sanctions are simply not working, therefore they must be scrapped.
Well, there is a symbolic value in the existence of these measures because primarily the scrapping of them would be sending a message. Which message would clearly be to imply or to explicitly say relations have normalized, have been restored to normalcy, because the conditions for which they were initially put which relates to human rights abuses, which relates to governance issues, which relates to democracy, have been, and the restoration of the rule of law, have returned to normal. And this is the message that the EU has to be careful about.
That was human rights lawyer Dewama Vinga, a senior researcher with human rights, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Zambia's newly elected President Edgar Lungu was in Harare today for bilateral talks with President Robert Mugabe. Lungu's Patriotic Front, about 3 weeks ago, won a closely contested presidential election following last year's death of the country's president. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi reports from Harare.
President Lungu was welcomed at the Harare International Airport by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who immediately took him for talks at a local hotel before meeting Mr. Mugabe at State House. Following their four-hour meeting, Mr. Lungu told journalists that he had come to seek wisdom from the Zimbabwean leader.
President Mugabe is the most senior in the region, so you seek wisdom from the elders, don't you?
Mr. Lungu met Mr. Mugabe shortly before Zambian elections last month that ushered him into power. The Zimbabwean leader was in Zambia just before the results of those elections were announced, triggering a demonstration from supporters of Zambia's losing presidential candidate, Hakainde Hichilema, of the United Party for National Development. The two African leaders also met last week in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, during the African Union Heads of States and Governments annual summit, where Mr. Mugabe assumed the chairmanship of the continental body. Political analyst Takura Jangaja says Mr. Lungu's visit to Harare was not surprising because of the historical ties of Zambia's Patriotic Front, once led by the late President Michael Osata, and Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party.
It means President Lungu and President Mugabe are very close, and probably President Mugabe is a mentor to President Lungu and definitely played a key role in advising him as to how to run an election, as well as to demonstrate solidarity between the two PFs, ZANU-PF and the Patriotic Front of Zambia.
Meanwhile, Zambia's Foreign Affairs Minister, Erika Laba, told Studio 7 that the two presidents discussed bilateral issues with a special focus on trade between the two countries.
Increased bilateral trade between the two countries. Zambia and Zimbabwe are closely knitted, so we have found it important that we need to trade more than we are doing. We have said we need to increase bilateral trade between the two countries, and the two presidents have agreed on that.
After meeting Mr. Mugabe, the Zambian president was escorted to the airport by Vice President Mnangagwa. Mr. Lungu is expected to visit Angola next week. Reporting for Studio 7 from State House, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up, the curtain comes down on the African Cup of Nations tournament on Sunday, with two West African teams fighting for the continent's coveted cup. But first, a look at regional and international news. Islamic State militants say an American aid worker being held by the insurgent group has been killed in a Jordanian airstrike, the site intelligence group reported today. U.S. officials have not yet commented on the report. Jordan has been carrying out airstrikes against Islamic State targets after the group's gruesome murder of a Jordanian pilot who was captured in Syria in December. Yemen's powerful Shia rebels finalized their takeover of the country today, announcing they have dissolved the parliament and are establishing a new presidential council to run Yemeni affairs. And thousands of people flooded the streets of Jordan's capital Amman today in support of the Jordanian military pilot murdered by Islamic State militants. The demonstrators marched through the city after today's prayers at the Al Hussein Mosque, waving Jordanian flags and chanting slogans against the Islamic State group. The Welshman Ncube-led MDC says it has reshuffled its National Youth Executive Committee in line with the party's constitution, despite a pending unification with the MDC renewal team. In a statement, the party's newly elected youth chairman Gideon Mandaza of Mashonaland East Province says the reshuffle has ensured that gender quotas and equal representation of all the party's 12 political provinces is maintained, among other reasons. Collins Decent Bajila, the party secretary general for the youth wing, tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga the reshuffle is in fact another phase of preparing for the youth's maximum participation in the unification process with the MDC renewal team.
Over the past few years, some of the people who formed the leadership of the assembly, who had grown above the youth age limit that we have in our constitution, which is 35. Therefore, it became necessary that while we are going for this unification phase, we go with people who are indeed young people. So this was one of the issues that formed the background, because you had several provinces that no longer had enough representation in the national executive, because their membership had gone beyond the youth age limit.
Was there a pressing need to form this executive, seeing that you are now uniting with the renewal team and you may even reshuffle the youth executive again?
It was necessary for us to do so, because while going for unification, both political parties must have full structures. We didn't have a full structure because some of our colleagues were no longer young people. You can't go for the unification process if you do not have full structures. All over the country, the party is involved in auditing its structures to ensure that they are full, and that is part of the preparation for unification.
That was a dissent by Collins Bajila, Secretary General of the Youth Wing in the Welshman Ncube-led MDC, on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa. And in sports news, the curtain comes down at the African Cup of Nations tournament on Sunday, with two West African teams fighting for the continent's coveted cup. Betting houses in Zimbabwe have been active during the past 22 days of the tournament. Reporter Michael Kariati has more details from Harare.
Some football fans are counting the cost of their losses, while those who place their faith on Ivory Coast and the Black Stars of Ghana has every reason to smile. But the guessing game that has been going on comes to an end in the Equatorial Guinea on Sunday, with indications that the balance of football power is shifting from North Africa to other parts of the continent. Former Zimbabwe national team goalkeeper coach Nkululeko Dlamini is among soccer critics who believe that West Africa is becoming a force to reckon with in African soccer.
If you look at football these days, it's changing. There's no nation that can be said it's a bigger or smaller nation. Football is fast developing all nations.
The Super Eagles of Nigeria, who unfortunately could not defend their title as they fell by the wayside in the qualifiers, are the current holders of the cup. North African giants Egypt have won the tournament a record 7 times, while Tunisia have 2 titles and Algeria has 1. Ghana last won the title 33 years ago, while the Ivorians have come close twice in the past 3 editions by reaching the finals. Caps United supporter Farah Mugoni thinks the elephant's misery will continue. In fact, there is so much belief in the Black Stars that even another football follower, Jivas Makoni, says he has raised enough money to place his bet on the Black Stars.
Personally, I'm betting Ghana.
However, it would be folly to underestimate the overall strength and team spirit of the Ivorians, once one of Africa's top-ranked teams. But whatever happens, the truth is that the trophy will remain in West Africa for another 2 years. While the curtain is coming down on the Africa Cup of Nations, the Zimbabwe Premier Soccer League have announced that the 2015 soccer program will begin on March 1 without the traditional season opening knockout tournament. Initially, the Mbada Diamonds Cup, which was called off last season, was supposed to open up the season, but this will not be the case, as the company has failed to mobilize enough financial resources to light up the start of the season. Premier Soccer League Chief Executive Officer Kenneth Ndebele has informed all the clubs of the start of the season, adding that they would want the program end by the latest on December 20. Dynamos are the defending champions after winning the title for four consecutive years. But the champions lost their title-winning coach, Nalisto Pasua, at the end of last season. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thanks, Michael. And now coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The nature of the terrorist threat has evolved over the course of the past several years. While the threat posed by al-Qaeda with its centralized hierarchical terrorist command structure has now diminished, largely as a result of leadership losses suffered by the AQ Corps, other violent extremist groups have emerged. Groups that have become active in places like Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iraq, and Somalia are mainly localized, but some pose a threat to Western interests in Europe and the United States, and we take these security concerns very seriously. Lately, the most visible manifestation of terrorism in the West has come in the context of so-called lone wolf offender attacks, as we saw in the case of the terrorist assassinations at the Paris publication Charlie Hebdo. Only by working together can the international community successfully counter groups like these, said Tina Cadenow, U.S. Ambassador-at-Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism. Take ISIL, for example. We have worked to build an effective anti-ISIL coalition, a coalition that is clearly crucial because the fight against ISIL is not one the U.S. can or should pursue alone. More than 60 partners are contributing to this effort, which is multifaceted in its goals, not only to stop ISIL's advance on the ground, but to combat the flow of foreign fighters, disrupt ISIL's financial resources, and counteract ISIL's messaging and undermine its appeal, said Ambassador Cadenow. The United States believes a successful approach to counterterrorism must revolve around partnerships. Effective partnering means identifying governmental, non-governmental, and multilateral actors overseas that can make a difference in this battle against the most salient terrorist threats facing the international community. Partners come with various capabilities and varying amounts of political will, so cultivating them is not just a matter of diplomatic engagement, but also means working with them to develop the technical and practical skills needed to counter terrorism within their borders and beyond. The threats we confront are serious and far-reaching, and it will take considerable time and effort to develop the partnerships and institutional components we need to address them, said Ambassador Cadenow. Nevertheless, we believe this is the most effective and sustainable approach to a complex and enduring challenge.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about the African Cup of Nations as Ghana clash with Ivory Coast on Sunday. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Is this love? I guess it is. By the way, this is the month of February. And that song from Bob Marley, who could have been 70 today if he was alive, brings the show to an end. But before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories. Some ZANU-PF activists led by a Harare councillor have blocked the official groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of an Asian-funded $40 million state-of-the-art mall. Zambia's newly elected President Edgar Lungu was in Harare today for bilateral talks with President Robert Mugabe. That's the end of our bulletin tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe, and have yourself a lovely weekend.